a local restaurant that was actually delivering dinner and meals by snowmobile out to the lake. So they were delivering like hot food to the houses that were on Lake Waconia, which was really neat. So they were bringing, you know, burgers and fries and stuff out to people.
I think you got to, like, you always, like, I'm a firm believer, like, you always give the pizza guy a good tip. If he's delivering it out to your ice house, I think you got to give him, like, a really good tip.
No doubt.
Yes.
Hi, everyone. I'm Stephanie.
And I'm Jeremy.
Authors of Where Should We Camp Next? A 50-state guide to amazing campgrounds and other unique outdoor accommodations.
Almost 12 years ago, we bought a pop-up camper that changed our lives and introduced us to the joys of RV travel.
Join us now as we talk about where to camp, what gear to bring, and the best food to cook.
We will also keep you dialed in to the latest RV innovations from people in the know.
So pull up a chair and join us around the digital campfire.
This is the RV Atlas. Hello, everybody, and welcome to today's episode of the RV Atlas. Today, we are going to do one of my favorite types of interviews. And it's an interview that sprung completely out of our listeners and members of our Facebook group. So back in July, I got a Facebook message from Hannah Aholt Larson. And I'm going to read that message to you. She wrote, "If you and Stephanie are ever looking for winter content for your podcasts, my husband and I could give you tons of info on ice house experiences. Just a thought. We live in Minnesota where ice fishing is huge, all caps, H-U-G-E. People buy ice castles, fancy fish houses, that are basically small RVs. They use them year-round, and you see them at a lot of the campgrounds here in Minnesota. Of course, winter is when they form villages out on the lakes, and many people stay all weekend out on the ice. Let us know if you're ever interested in more info, or if you guys are ever in Minnesota looking for a different type of camping experience. We really enjoy your podcast and the Facebook group. Thanks." So my response to Hannah was, of course I'm interested in doing an episode on ice house fishing. I mean, like, I pride myself on knowing RV life and RV culture really, really well. And I have to admit, like, I know nothing about these, like, ice house RVs and these ice house villages that form out on lakes in places like Minnesota. So I was fascinated with the idea. I mean, she emailed me back in July. So I wrote back to her and I said, look, when it gets a little bit colder and it seems like the right time of year, let's definitely do this interview with you and your husband. And you guys can give us sort of a ice house fishing 101 episode on the podcast. So that's what we're going to do today. And I absolutely, absolutely found this whole culture fascinating. It is now officially on my bucket list to go ice house fishing out on a lake in Minnesota, and hopefully with Hannah and her husband, Dave. So we'll be back in a second after sponsored messages, and we're going to dive into a great conversation with Hannah and Dave about ice house fishing in Minnesota. Who is ready to go? Because I know I am. CampSpot is a free instant booking platform for camping across North America. Research and book the best campgrounds, RV parks, cabins, glamping destinations, and more, whether it's last minute or for your epic road trip months away. CampSpot lets you filter your search results by the type of getaway you want. Browse by location, price point, site type, amenities, and more. CampSpot also offers premium inventory, real-time availability, and a lowest price guarantee so that you can find the best sites at the best campgrounds for the best prices. Plus, you can save your favorite campground finds for future trips and keep all of your reservations organized in one place. No more digging through old emails to access those reservations. With CampSpot, they are always right at your fingertips. It is time to book those 2022 camping trips right now, believe it or not. To find your camp spot, visit campspot.com today. And now it's time for a sponsored message from our friends at Go RVing. Go RVing's newly designed website, GoRVing.com, is packed with all of the information you need to get started and go RVing. Check out Go RVing's Get Started tab to find information from real RVers about buying an RV, renting an RV, finding a campground, and a comprehensive first-timer's toolkit. The Buying an RV section includes a complete guide to buying a new RV and tips for visiting national parks. The Renting an RV section explores your options for trying before buying. The Finding a Campground section lets you search campgrounds by state. The First-Timer's Toolkit is a robust set of blog posts and how-to videos that will turn you into an expert RVer in no time at all. Go RVing's Get Started tab is packed with the content you need to become a more experienced RVer and have fun doing it. And this is just a small sample of the content you will find there. To find out more, head on over to GoRVing.com. Hello, Hannah and Dave, and welcome to the RV Atlas. How are both of you?
Doing well.
Doing great.
I'm really excited that you reached out to talk about ice fishing in Minnesota because it's something I've always kind of like thought would be really, really cool, but it's not a topic I can cover. So you reached out on Facebook and said, hey, this might be a cool podcast. And I was like, bingo, let's do it. So here we are.
Yeah.
Here we are.
To prepare, I went for a walk outside in the cold for about an hour. And I checked out some ice fishing houses on GoRVing.com. So actually, you can go over there and check those out. But before you guys kind of like educate us on ice fishing and give us like a 101 introduction, just tell me about your family and like, you know, how you started camping, how you got into RVing in the first place.
Yeah. So when I was a kid, my parents had a pop-up camper and we would go camping just around here in Minnesota. And Dave would go with his dad. They would go camping. They would go car and truck camping around the state. And then as we got older, Dave and I actually started kind of camping together at a music festival, is where we kind of got into using an actual camper instead of a tent. We were renting RVs at that point. And then we now have two children. We have a toddler and a 3-month-old. And in the last year or so, with the pandemic and all that good COVID fun, we decided that we wanted to embrace camping as a way for us to travel safely with the restrictions and stuff like that that was going on. And we also have a dog and some chickens. So weekend trips are easier for us than taking a week off and having to find someone to watch the dog and the chickens and take off work and stuff. So for us, the weekend camping trips was kind of the perfect plan for us to start out as a young family.
So where do you guys Stephanie and I have been to Minnesota, not enough. Like, where do you like to camp when it's like spring, summer, fall, right before the whole ice fishing season?
So in the spring, we like to go to Baker Park because it's close by for us. And that's a good shakedown test for us.
And that was actually, I think you guys have that in your book.
Yes.
In Where Should We Camp Next? Yes. That's like a half an hour, not even from our house. That's actually really close and local for us. So we love it there.
And the lake is beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the summertime, we will plan our trips for longer distance traveling. and then come fall time, we're restricted by weather because it gets cold here and we have to winterize the RV. Usually, you know, mid-October, end of October, and that's when the campgrounds close. So again, we'll try to stay closer in the fall just because sometimes we will have water, sometimes we won't have water.
And then I know, like, you know, my dad on my side of the family, they're big into hunting and stuff too. And so we've talked about when the kids are a little bit older, going as a family up to the woods and stuff and kind of boondocking, if you will, up there for a weekend or something like that too, but haven't got to do that yet, but we would like to.
Now, anytime we've been in the Midwest quite a bit, and I'm always amazed at how strong the camping culture is in like Michigan, Wisconsin, Minnesota. And, you could almost think like, oh, the season's so short. Why are people so passionate about RVing and camping? But you're kind of making me realize you guys get to go year round, right? So everything shuts down campground wise mid-October, but then this whole other season starts up. So are we ready? Are you guys ready to educate our audience about ice fishing and just kind of walk us through this whole, it's almost like its own subculture of RVing, right?
Right. Yes.
All right. So when does the ice fishing season start? Like you said, you winterize your camper mid-October. Most of the campgrounds close. Then when does this whole part of your RVing life start up for you?
So the season starts for ice fishing. Usually beginning of December is when the ice will freeze over and you can start walking out. And typically, you know, by the end of December, we have enough ice that you can drive your truck and fish house out.
And how do you determine it? Like, who's the first guy out there? Like, I mean, like, who makes the call? I'm sorry, this is like a foreign culture to me. Like, how do you decide it's safe?
The way that you determine it's safe is that you would take your auger and you drill holes on your way out from shore so that you know how thick the ice is.
Now, I love how you say take your auger like I have one, right? Like that's so that's literally like a, just a common tool you'd have if you're an ice fisherman or ice fisherwoman, as it were. And how thick does it have to be?
Well, to safely drive a pickup out, you need about 12 inches of ice. And to walk out, you typically want, you know, four to eight inches of ice, just because the ice can be different thicknesses all around. So you could have a spot where there's 2 inches of ice, and then you could have a spot with 8 inches of ice.
So are you using that auger multiple times as you sort out where you're going to set up camp?
Exactly. You would walk your path to where you're going, and you would drill a hole every 15 to 20 feet so that you know exactly how thick the ice is.
So it's a little bit labor intensive to some degree, right? I mean, there's some work involved, but it's also probably part of the fun, I would think.
Correct. Definitely.
And there's like, you know, ice reports and Facebook groups, and you hear from friends and stuff, kind of, you know, how many inches of ice is on Lake Waconia.
It's a very popular topic.
Yeah. So you can kind of hear word of mouth what one's ready to go, like what lake is ready to go out on.
Now, once you determine, all right, it's safe, we've got our 12 inches, which is good enough for our half ton. Maybe it needs to be 15 inches for a 3/4 ton or something. It sounds like you guys are like very precise with this. Like, once you determine it's safe, are people just setting up for the weekend, or are they setting up for weeks? How does that typically work?
So when we put our fish house out, we typically will fish the same lake all winter. So when you do that, you can set your house down on the ice and you could leave it there all winter in the same spot if you wanted to.
Because in other words, once it's frozen to 12 inches or whatever for you guys, it's staying there, right? I mean, like, you know, you got to understand, like in New Jersey, a lake could be frozen for a week and then it's not frozen the next week.
Yes. Once the ice is there, it's staying there. Sometimes I think this is maybe more towards the end of the season, if it warms up enough that the ice starts to melt a little bit, what'll happen is your fish house will kind of like sink down a little bit into the ice, which is really a big pain, because when it comes time to take the house off of the lake, you have to kind of dig it out. But once the ice is there, it's usually, you know, it's safe through the season for you to keep going out on the lake and going back to your house.
Now, like Stephanie and I have winter camped over the years and we really enjoy winter camping. And like, I feel really cool that like I've camped in 27 degree weather. You guys are making me feel really soft. Like I'm like this soft New Jersey RV guy. I mean, this sounds awesome. I mean,
a fish house is specifically designed for cold weather. Mm-hmm. So when you build an ice castle or a fish house, they typically use spray foam insulation, and they're built really tight so that they heat up quickly, and you can stay warm when it's, you know, minus 20, minus 30, or even colder.
Well, and I remember, you know, you had asked me for some photos and stuff, and I was looking through my phone and I actually came across a photo from 2019. I must have screenshot the,
the weather for that day. And it has the temperature was only negative 19. And I say only, like, it's not a big deal. I mean, it's cold. But the wind chill that day was negative 47. And we live in, like, West Metro. We're not super far north in Minnesota. We're, you know, pretty average temperatures for the state. And so if the wind chill is negative 47, I mean, it's definitely cold out on the lake.
So, I mean, look, okay, you can stay warm and cozy in your, you know, your fish house, your ice house. And we're going to talk about the different types in a second. But, like, how long can you step outside and actually explain the fishing part, like the actual process of, like, being in the ice house and then the fishing? And I can't get a picture of this. Like, tell me more.
So I've got the easy part because usually by the time I get there, Dave's already got the house warmed up and the holes drilled, and I just get to show up and hang out. But when he goes out there, you know, you're driving in your vehicle and you find your house. That's half the battle, is to remember where you put it. And once you do, you have to think about it like a cabin, right? Up north is totally its own culture in Minnesota. We are so lake based that, you know, up north, every kid, I'm sure, has gone up north for the weekend at some point to their cabin or a friend's cabin or family's cabin. And in the winter, they usually winterize their cabins. And instead of going to the cabin, you can go ice fishing. And so just like you would open and close a cabin for the season, you kind of open and close your ice house, right? And same thing with an RV. Well, you also have to do it for the day. If you're going to be out there all day or for the weekend, you have to warm it up and get everything set up, bring out your food, bring out whatever you're going to need. And then Dave's part is usually drilling the holes with the auger and all the equipment piece.
Right. And when you drill your holes, you create a bunch of snow, and then you have to get all the snow and slush out of your holes so that you can drop your lures down the hole.
So it's kind of a process.
Now, it's labor intensive, and I'm not saying that as a criticism. I think that there's great joy in doing things like that. I mean, are you really trying to catch a lot of fish, or is the catching of the fish?
Well, I think that depends on who you ask. You know, the guys are out there, they may be, you know, having more drinks than they are catching fish, which is totally fine. But there are people that get really into it and very serious. I mean, they've got, like, you know, tournaments and stuff like that too. So it's kind of what you make of it, you know. Same with camping in the summer. There's more equipment that you can buy and amenities that you can have within your RV, just like you can within your ice house, that make it a little easier and less labor intensive to get things up and going. The auger, for example, I'm sure you've, you know, seen a movie or a TV show or looked on the internet and seen that there's, like, the old no motorized, just plain old hand auger that somebody uses with man muscle to drill a hole through the ice. And then there's the really fancy ones that are motorized with a little engine on them, or use a screwdriver. I think you have I use a
Milwaukee drill.
Yeah.
Now, do people get judgy if you're not, you know, not going, yes, like, full man mode, and you've got, like, the Bluetooth enabled auger with, like, USB chargers?
Yes, there's definitely those people.
But you know what, though? Like, everybody out there is rugged to me. So let's talk about these different types of ice houses, because, you know, like, in your messages back and forth with me, you know, there's different price points. It's this whole other, you know, subculture of RVing. So just for somebody who's interested and might want to do this someday, or for somebody just curious like me, like walk me through, like, what some of the options are and what type of features you might get in an ice house. And if you know some price points too, just tell me what you know on that whole topic.
Yeah, I think it kind of relates to summer camping too. You know, tent, something like a tent versus a really expensive motorhome. You have the same thing with ice houses. The most inexpensive thing you can do is to take a 5-gallon pail and go walk out onto the ice, flip the pail over for a stool, and fish out in the open. That's the kind of fishing I would recommend when it's not cold and the sun is shining and it's nice weather out. But then they also have portable fish houses, and some people that go spearfishing, they have their own special fish houses. Another thing that with the more inexpensive options, like going out into the open or using a portable, is the bathrooms. And so we actually have used a portable as a bathroom house, kind of separate from our fish house, and we didn't have a bathroom in it.
Like a porta potty.
Like a porta potty.
Right.
It's very similar to, you know, the levels of restroom capabilities that you have with a tent versus the fancy motorhome. It's kind of the same thing. And then the other thing too is just if you're going to be out there for the weekend and you want to bring food and drinks and stuff with you, the nicer fish house, like a nicer ice house, will have the full kitchen capabilities. And that more inexpensive option, you're really just bringing a cooler to keep your food in. When we go out, if we decide to bring food, you know, we'll maybe put in a cooler or a bag or something. But if you bring a case of beer or a case of pop with you, you don't need to really think about putting that in the cooler, because you can just set it outside and your beer is literally on ice, so it stays nice and cold.
Now, what about, like, you said you have a kitchen in some of them. You don't have running water, though, right? I mean, they're not that well insulated, are they?
Well, the people who will run the water can de-winterize for the weekend and then winterize at the end of the weekend, as long as you keep your heat on.
Right.
And so those inexpensive ice house that we're talking about, options like a portable, you know, it's not insulated like a permanent that you have on for the whole season. It's something that you set up for the day. And it's a portable house is kind of, there's a couple different kinds. We had the kind that had a sled, and it's like a canvas tent, like a pop-up tent that goes over the sled. And it's just, you know, it's canvas material. That's what's between you and the wind. So in that situation, a lot of times you have the buddy heaters are what we've used. And it's just a little propane heater that you keep. And it actually gets really warm. I mean, even if it's cold out, a lot of times you're down to a sweatshirt and your pants and your boots, because it heats up pretty good in those little.
Well, that's good to know. Like, I have a Mr. Buddy heater, you know, like that I use outside sometimes. So that actually can warm up the space if you're in.
Yes.
So what are you guys using right now? Are you saying this is what you did have, or is this what you're using now?
We had a portable, and then we had two of them. Mm-hmm. And we got rid of them. Right now, Dave is doing, he's kind of custom building an ice house. So it's kind of starting from scratch and making it the way that he wants it to. So we're in the middle of finishing that one right now.
Oh my God, that's amazing. You got to tell me more. You got to tell Dave, tell me more. Like, what is the vision here? Or what is this one going to be like?
Well, I like to build my own stuff, and I like to build it the way I want it. So instead of buying one that's already finished, I bought a used one. And I stripped it down to the studs, and I put my own siding on it, and I'm going to finish it all, design it the way I want it on the inside. I designed the layout of all the holes, where I want my dinette, window placement. I rebuilt the roof and put a new roof on it. It started from, you can buy just the frame and then you build up from there. And there's special frames that drop down to the ice.
Well, yeah. And that mid-range kind of section that we were talking about too, there's two different kinds. They have a wheelhouse and a skid house. And the kind that you're building, I guess, would be a wheelhouse.
No, no, tell me more about that, because I was looking at the pictures of these. And I was like, wait a second, that there's no clearance on the tires. It's right on the ground. Can you explain that, how that works?
So what you do is, when you're driving down the road, you will raise the house up so it lifts the frame up, and then you'll have, you know, typically about 15 inches of clearance underneath the frame for driving down the road. Then when you get to the ice, you've found your spot you want to fish, you want to drop the house down onto the ice, because if you had the house sitting up in the air, now you have a bunch of airflow underneath the house. And also, when you catch a fish, then you have to raise the fish you know, you would have to raise it 15 inches up from the surface of the lake, where our house is dropped down to the ice and you're sitting right down on top of the water.
So you're fishing inside the ice house.
Correct.
And so that's a big part of like the floor plan design, right? I mean, do you have like comfortable seating there, or is it just sort of like this hole in the ground? Like, explain.
See, and that's why I wanted to build my own house, because I wanted to design the whole layout for where I want to fish.
And these houses, like these, well, anything that's not a portable, essentially, when you walk in, the floor plan will typically, they consist of a dinette bed setup. A lot of times there's a little kitchen area, but essentially it's a big rectangle, and there's, I don't know, anywhere from like 4 to 8 holes in these houses. And they have covers on them, which is important because it's very easy to drop your phone in the lake or something else. So
do you speak from experience there?
Maybe slightly.
Yes.
It seems every season somebody we know drops their cell phone in the lake.
Oh my gosh! So you'll be 3 or 4 holes in a nice house, and is that so that like 3 or 4 people can be fishing at once? Is that the point of that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Typically, all my houses that I've ever owned, I've had 8 holes. So you could have up to 8 people fishing at one time.
So this is a communal, this is a bring your buddies kind of experience
definitely,
too.
Definitely, yes.
And I would imagine like not everybody has an ice house, right? And then does everybody crash for the night in your ice house?
Yes. Yep.
Okay. And so like, you said there maybe is like a bed and a dinette, but you know, if you're bringing a bunch of people with you, is everyone just sort of crashing on the floor with sleeping bags, or how does that work if you have 6 or 7 people with you?
Well, the more expensive, I mean, like, so that mid-range prices on those are, I don't know, like new, what would you say?
Probably about, you know, 15 to 20,000.
Like a very average, I mean, different brands, just like campers, cost more or less. The nicer ones, kind of like the premium, if you will, are ice castles, and those are typically the nicest that can accommodate the most people. I mean, they make really big ones, they make small ones, they make ones that have slide outs just like you would in an RV. They actually make RV edition ice castles, and I mean, the larger ones, how long are they?
They can be, you know, 28 feet, 26 feet.
No, and you got to be more careful about the depth of like the ice and everything, right? I mean, like, you're bringing a lot of weight out there at that point.
You are. But at the same token, when you come out with a larger shack, yes, you have more weight, but typically you'll have more tires. You'll have a tandem axle. So you're spreading the weight out more when you have a tandem axle. And then when you set the house down, all your weight is distributed along the frame of the fish house. So yes, you have more weight, but your weight is distributed out further with a bigger house.
That's fascinating. So a single axle that could be significantly smaller because all of the weight is sitting over those 2 tires could actually be more of a concern or whatever.
It could be, yes.
Oh, that's so, and you don't think of that with a regular RV because it's like the ground is beneath you, right? Like, who cares?
Right.
Oh my gosh, this is so fascinating. Do they sell, or do people make them, or do they sell ones that have like 8 beds, almost like a hunting lodge kind of thing? Is that part of it?
Yeah, so like almost every, like, okay, think about your typical RV. The bunkhouse is a common, you know, setup feature, right? And the couch usually folds out into a bed, and there's usually like a queen bed at the front of a lot of the travel trailers. For ice castles, or fish house in general, a lot of times there's a bed that lowers from the ceiling. So there'll
like
be
a
like
toy
a
holder
bed.
Almost.
Correct, exactly.
Yeah. And then the dinette usually turns into 1-2. The more fancy ones, like some of those RV additions are like an RV. They've got fireplaces, recliners, bunks, kitchens. I mean, they kind of go all out with them, but it's just like a camper. It depends how much you want to spend. Or you have, you know, Dave's approach. Sometimes people custom build their own and kind of do their own thing.
I am loving this conversation because, like, here I am, you know, working in the RV industry, and I just don't know any of this. This is fascinating to me. Do a lot of them have propane heating systems? I saw some of them actually have, like, wood-burning stoves.
So typically, most fish houses use a propane heater, a suburban forced air heater. It's very common, just like in your RV. Back in the day, a lot of people who would build their own fish house would use a wood stove. Now, a wood stove in a small fish house is really hard to regulate, and typically they would be really warm.
Too hot, too fast.
Yes, exactly. So the propane is nice because you can turn it up, turn it down, it's on a thermostat. So it's much more comfortable.
But you're blasting through that propane, though. You got, like, how many, like, these, like the one you're custom making, like, how many propane tanks are you going to have on board, you know?
So I have two 30-pound tanks.
Two 30-pound tanks. And, like, okay, so say it's minus 20, right? I mean,
yeah,
you could go through one of those in a night easily, right?
Not usually. Usually you'd go through a 20 pound in a weekend if it's really cold.
Okay.
But it also depends on the size of the fish house.
Sure.
And a lot of times up north where it's colder, they'll have two 100 pound tanks. And actually all of my old fish houses, I had 100 pound tanks on them.
The one we just sold had, didn't it?
Yeah.
The one you're making, the one you're building, how many feet is that?
It's, it's 8 by 16 plus a 4-foot V. So 20 feet, but 4 feet of it is in a V shape in the front.
And are they going to, and why, and what is this, the function of the V shape? Just some kind of aerodynamic design feature, or does that serve some purpose in the ice house?
It is for aerodynamics, exactly.
Okay, and you have two boys. Are you, like, going to put bunk beds in yours, or how are you going to do, like, the sleeping part of it?
We'll have a dinette in the back, similar setup to a toy hauler. And then we'll have a bunk that folds down above that for one person to sleep. And then in the V, in the front, we'll have two bunks for the kids.
This sounds amazing to have these two young boys. I mean, one of your boys is 3 months old, right?
Right.
And how old is the older one?
2 years.
Just turned two.
Okay. So I'm just, like, trying to remember what it's like to have a two-year-old. Like, I mean, is he, because it's been a while, is he, like, pumped up to go, or is he just sort of not so aware of, like, oh, we're going ice fishing? I mean, is it something that he's excited about already? I mean, how cool for two young boys to grow up with you guys and do this every winter.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think he'll be more excited, like, after he gets to go once this season. I don't think he probably doesn't, you know, remember or know what it is. Right. So I think after this season, he might be interested in looking forward to it again.
Oh my God. It's just great. Okay. We have more to talk about. We're going to come back in a second, but first we have a sponsored message from our friends at Thetford. Thetford makes going places easy by manufacturing top RV maintenance and sanitation products, and they've been doing it since 1963. Thetford's Aquamax holding tank treatments neutralize odors and accelerate waste digestion to prevent clumping, clogging, and tank residue, all at the same time. The Aquamax family is Bronopol and formaldehyde free, so it's campground friendly and California compliant. It's also proudly made in the USA. Thetford's family of Aquamax holding tank treatments have been extensively researched and treated safe for all RV and marine toilets, holding tanks, and septic systems. Aquamax is available in liquid toss-ins and drive packets in 7 different sizes and in spring shower scent and summer cypress scent. To find out more, head on over to Thetford.com. Welcome back to the show, Hannah and Dave. And I just want you to know you're getting me so interested in this that I will probably show up at your doorstep at some point in the next 2 years. And you are going to have to promise to take me. And I will be that guy that brings lots and lots of coffee out there with me.
That's perfect.
Of course.
So how often do you guys go? Is it like every weekend in the winter?
Well, in the wintertime, there's not actually a whole lot to do. So you have to make the best of the cold winter. Well, when I was younger and single, I used to fish every day. I'd go straight from work right to the fish house. But now we typically try to make a weekend of it.
It's, now with kids, it's hard to do anything that's not, you know, to do like a further away trip. And you think about ice fishing season is December, January. There's so many different, you know, things going on with holidays and stuff.
Right.
So it's hard to get away for something that's longer than just a weekend. So we typically, with the kids this age, are doing more just, you know, local stuff, which is totally fine.
And by the way, do you need a permit? Is it just totally free and you just go out and find your spot?
No, you have to buy a license.
Okay. Like a fishing license. Just like you would if you were, you know, obviously fishing is a hot topic in Minnesota because we have so many lakes. So summer fishing too, you have to have a license. And the license is usually good for a year.
Yep.
And if you go, so if I'm going to be in Minnesota, I buy a Minnesota license. But if I'm going to go to Wisconsin for the weekend or something, even, you have to buy a Wisconsin fishing license.
Is the ice fishing, is it as big in Wisconsin, or is Minnesota like it's the biggest there? I mean, how does that work? And I mean, you guys have so many lakes.
We have so many lakes. It's also very popular in Wisconsin.
So now tell me about the little villages. I'm looking at your notes here. Tell me about like what are the like villages form out there? Like what do you mean by that? You know, paint a picture for me.
So if you were to drive out to the lake on any given day in the wintertime, you'll see hundreds of fish houses all grouped, you know, together. And
at least at the lakes that we're by.
Yeah. If you go to a smaller lake, you might see fish houses spread out, you know, more seldom.
Yeah. Two of the big lakes like are near us is Lake Waconia and Lake Minnetonka. Lake Minnetonka is much bigger than Lake Waconia, but they're both popular ice fishing lakes. And in the winter, so it's kind of interesting. I don't know if you've done much boating on a lake before or not, but, you know, in the summertime, you see vehicles coming in and out of the launch to launch their boat off of a trailer. In the winter, that's the entrance and the exit to the lake for trucks driving out to their ice house. So they actually make ice roads. We have snow plows that will actually come plow a path towards like main chunks and little villages and neighborhoods, if you will, of fish house or of ice houses. So there's roads that they actually make for people to get to and from their house and on and off the lake.
Now I'm trying to like get the culture of it. So do people want their space? Like, oh, don't come set up by me. Or is it like clusters of friends get together and do it?
There are people who don't like other people putting their fish houses right next to each other. But then there's also other people who will go out in groups and then they'll put their fish houses in a certain pattern so that it actually blocks the wind. But there are a lot of grumpy people who don't like other people setting up right next to them.
So it's just like but it's like normal camping though. Like there's some people that are like, I'm going to go boondock. I don't want to see other people. And then there's people people who are fine at a KOA and everybody's on top of each other or whatever. Right.
So
all the same rules apply. Now, is this true? Pizza can be delivered.
Yes. Can be delivered.
You can order pizza. And actually, so last year was very unique with everything going on with COVID, in that we had, so we live in a town called Waconia and we go on Lake Waconia with our house, right? Last year with COVID and the indoor dining being shut down in, you know, throughout the year and season and stuff, we had a local restaurant that was actually delivering dinner and meals by snowmobile out to the lake. So they were delivering like hot food to the houses that were on Lake Waconia, which was really neat. So they were bringing, you know, burgers and fries and stuff out to people.
And the food is still hot when it gets there?
It is. I mean, whenever I've had pizza, it's still hot.
Oh my gosh. This sounds like
something. I mean, I guess it depends on how good of directions you give them.
Or if you meet them at the launch too, sometimes.
I think you got to, like, you always, like, I'm a firm believer, like, you always give the pizza guy a good tip. If he's delivering it out to your ice house, I think you got to give him, like, a really good tip.
No doubt.
Yes.
All right. So is this common all across the state? Is it more popular up north? Is it widespread in Minnesota?
Ice fishing in general? Yes. I think, you know, I can speak to the local area a little bit more. Like I said, Lake Minnetonka and Lake Waconia are just two that we have frequented. Like Dave mentioned, you will see little villages out there on the lake. It's a popular thing. But also, you got to remember, in the middle of winter, we're pretty limited on activities and what you can do and where you can go. Not necessarily limited, I shouldn't say that. It's just different. So that's something that you end up doing when it's however long of winter you're sitting inside. You want to get outside and do something, but you don't want to freeze your butt off. Cross-country skiing, you can be warm and still go do something with your friends. So,
I'm sorry, go ahead, finish.
Oh, no, there's also the further north you go. So a couple other lakes that are big for ice fishing is Mille Lacs and Leech Lake. Those are both pretty big walleye fishing lakes. And in the summer, there's resorts and stuff on the lake that people will stay at to enjoy the lake in the summertime and you know, go summer fishing. In the winter, they're big with the ice fishing community. And then Dave, you can probably speak more to like Lake of the Woods and stuff, which is furthest north.
No, you can go even further north up, you know, close to the Canadian border. And there's still just as many lakes up there. But the most popular is Lake of the Woods. And there's people from down in the metro that will drive up every weekend, you know, 6 hours one way, all the way.
Is because the fishing is good, or it's more beautiful, or what's the draw?
The draw is the walleye fish.
Okay.
Where around here, we're typically fishing for panfish, sunfish, crappies, northerns, smaller fish.
So walleye's better eating, or it's just bigger?
They're bigger,
and better eating,
more beautiful.
Well,
everyone's chasing the dream of catching a 30-inch walleye to mount on the wall.
The other nice part about places like Lake of the Woods is, so, you know, someone like you has ever gone ice fishing. The beauty of going to somewhere like Lake of the Woods is they have guide services, just like you would in the summer, right? They do the same thing in the winter, where they will bring you out to a heated, set-up, holes-drilled fish house that's got everything that you need. And kind of set you up for the weekend or whatever, however long you're going to be up there. They have services to clean fish for you. They can deliver, you know, supplies and stuff to wherever you're at out on the lake. That's kind of, what would you say, the glamping of ice fishing, where you have a service, like a guide service type of thing like that.
Now, do you guys actually, like, you know, prepare and cook the fish that you catch while you're out there? Is that part of the experience for you?
So that depends on who you ask. My family is very, if there's a fillet on it, you keep it and you fry it. And Dave is a little different. He's done more catch and release. But you can catch fish, clean them, and fry them and eat them out on the lake if you want. So,
all right. So yeah. How about safety? Like, what do we need to know if we're going to, you know, I mean, look, if you're going to try it for the first time, you should go with somebody experienced, obviously. But what are some of the safety issues, concerns, or tips that you might have?
Yeah. And so I think one thing that people might think is odd, but you don't wear your seatbelt on the lake. So if you're, you know, my first instinct when I drive and get into my vehicle is I put my seatbelt on and I put my vehicle in drive and the doors automatically lock. Well, when you're going out on the ice, you never wear your seatbelt and you keep your doors unlocked. And I think you're supposed to keep your windows down even. Of course,
if you go down in your truck, you will not be able to open your doors.
Not to scare everybody away, because it's not that dangerous. Well, it's,
I mean,
okay.
It's just logical. I mean, what you're saying makes sense, right?
Yeah. And it depends to, you know, where you're going. And if you're up north where the ice is 3 feet thick, it's kind of a different story, but they say that no ice is ever safe. But they also make little tools. Like, I know I have one on my keychain that really is useful for anybody. It's not specific just to the ice, but that, you know, they can break a windshield or cut a seatbelt. So, you know, like those little gadgety tools that you can put on your keychain.
So just be prepared for the worst and hope it never happens.
I think the message is just be smart, you know, drive where the ice roads are. Don't go driving off on your own where there's nobody else around you on an adventure and you don't know what you're doing.
Well, and that's again, probably why people cluster, I would think too, right? Like, okay, it's safe over here.
Mm-hmm. Right. Correct.
And I think too, like, just know the ice thickness. Like, if it's not thick enough to drive the truck out, don't drive the truck.
So now the custom ice house you're making, will that be your camper in the summer as well?
We actually own an RV as well. We own both.
Okay. So is that more like, do a lot of people have both? Do a lot of people use their ice house as also their summer camper?
It's tough because you hate to have both, you know. But just for space constraint, most people can't store an RV and a fish house. We luckily can. But the nice part about an RV use in the summertime is that there's so much more space with an RV, where we have a super slide, and then we also have a rear slide and two bathrooms, and there's so much more space in an RV.
Because the ice houses have the eight holes, or they're just built for the fishing part. Is that why you're saying, like, that?
Correct. And most ice houses don't have slide outs, where with the slide out, you gain so much room.
Well, and the other piece too, is if you wanted one that had a slide out, you know, those larger RV edition ice castles, which are beautiful, your time that you can have that out on the ice in the winter too is a little more limited if you live further south. So if the ice doesn't get as thick where you live and you have to drive to use your house somewhere else on a different lake, or if your season is a little shorter because, you know, your ice doesn't start, you don't have enough ice as soon as somebody else does, it's not that much of a time difference, but it's still a consideration. So like for us, in order to use a large ice house, like a big RV edition ice castle that's got the space that we have with our camper, we would need to be probably putting it on a lake to get the most use of it further north than where we live. And for us with little kids, we kind of want to fish local and not be driving, you know, 3 hours north every weekend.
So it's so, look, this has been so wonderful. And, you know, it's like we all have assumptions about, you know, different parts of the country where we don't live. And, you know, I always think, I've just always thought, like, oh, the camping season is so short in the Midwest. And, you know, no, it's not. The camping season in the Midwest is apparently year round if you're willing to go ice fishing. You know, like you guys can probably, like, the campgrounds close around here in the Northeast October 31st, not much different than where you are, but then we don't have this incredible winter culture of the ice fishing. I mean, it sounds really, really like a wonderful aspect to life in Minnesota where you guys live.
And definitely. And there's, you know, people that have those, if they have an ice fish or a fish house, excuse me, a lot of times they'll use that in the summer too. Like, you know, we personally don't, but definitely it's something that you can do. And we were at Baker Park this past June, and I did see ice castles that were there camping in the summer, and they had air conditioning too. I mean, I know it's for winter, but these RV additions, or even, like, you know, one that you make yourself, they can definitely have AC and full functioning kitchens and can be just like a camper in the summer, as you would use it in the winter.
So the ones that you guys are calling the RV additions, is that sort of part of the point of those, is that they can be your camper in the summer and your ice house in the winter? Is that part of what the design is?
Correct. Exactly.
Gotcha. Well, guys, this was wonderful. Thank you so much for reaching out and just throwing out this idea. And I am determined, like, this is now on my bucket list. Like, I am determined to have this experience. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Of course. Thank you.
And I would love to have you back. Maybe you can give us a campground review from somewhere in Minnesota that you love.
Definitely.
All right. Awesome. Thank you. We'll see you at the campground.
Thanks.
Bye. A big thank you for listening to this episode of the RV Atlas, and a big thanks to our sponsors.
to Jayco, the Thetford Corporation, Camp Spot, Yogi Bear's Jellystone Park Camp Resorts, and our friends at Ocala Marion County in Florida.
To find out more about the topics discussed in this show, visit thervatlas.com.
And join the friendliest group of RVers over at the RV Atlas Group on Facebook.
And if you enjoyed this show, please consider leaving us a review over at iTunes.
And we'll see you at the campground.
See you at the campground.